Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. You can find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. You guys are in for a treat today because in addition to our regular Fantasy Football Podcast, we're going to be doing something a little different on this episode. As we've done every year recently, I think this might actually be their fourth podcast with us. We're going to welcome back our good friends from Team Rankings to discuss Survivor Pool Pick'em and Strategy, Pick'em Pools Picks and Strategy, and a 2020 season projections and team outlooks. I'm very pleased to be joined by David Hess and Jason List. Guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Should we let everybody in on the fact that we've been like dealing with mic issues for like the last hour? Or should we just pretend like this just went off?
We should pretend like we've never met before. And
this is the first time we're ever talking.
That's right.
Everyone, I hope we're all good with that. Yeah, no, we had a little few technical glitches, but we are really excited to have them fixed and we're ready to go. You know, we talk about it a lot in fantasy, the lead up to the season, making sure everything is ready and locked in overall. And for week one, especially with everything you guys offer, with all you have on your site, I got to think that you were just absolutely, totally ready, done, ready to get going for the season, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're happy, as I'm sure you are, to have a season starting on Thursday. With the way things have gone this year, being in a business where you dive in deep and you work on something like football projections and your livelihood's tied to making great Survivor and pick 'em picks, it's, you know, we don't want a world without that. We love football and we're excited to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it was a little dicey, you know, for a couple of months, but everything is looking good so far for right now and hopefully for a full season. So I'm really excited about this episode because if you listen to this podcast, then you play fantasy football, which means that you're watching football on Sundays, you're invested in football, and entering a survivor pool or a pick'em pool, it kind of takes things to the next level, especially this year, right? This is what we have. The NFL is here. Lean into it. Get as involved in everything and get as invested in the league as you possibly can. And if you are serious about it, David, Jason, the whole team over at Team Rankings is the best there is. So before we get into the show, guys, tell everyone a little bit about Team Rankings and exactly what you guys do over there.
The site has a lot of data and stats and everything related to sports. You know, you can find all sorts of data related to NFL, college football, NBA, all that. But what we really do and how we make our living throughout the year is we have betting picks, and then we also specialize in pool picks. And particularly for this time of year, survivor pools for NFL and your pick 'em pools or your office pools. And so, I mean, no other site that we know of goes into nearly as much depth as we do in terms of providing customized weekly recommendations for your pool, whether it's a survivor pool or pick 'em, based on all the factors you tell us: pool size, how many people you're playing with, the rules, whether it's a spread pool, whether you're picking games straight up, all that stuff. We provide advice based on all those to give you the best strategy possible. Just like in fantasy, you would not want to draft the same for a PPR league as you would for a league that did not award PPR points. We apply that same mentality to pool products to give you the best advice possible based on what you tell us.
Oh, so that's interesting because, yeah, we're going to get into how, you know, survivor pools and pick'em pools, they vary both in, you know, how you need to be approaching them, what the prizes are. So you can actually customize your specific pool at your website and get advice specifically based on that then.
Not only can you customize your specific pool, you can customize a lot of different pools. So like with Survivor, you get to enter as many pools as you want, up to 30 entries. So you could have 30 different pools with one entry. You could have, you know, multiple pools that some had lots of entries in them, and all of them could be different rules. And so that's part of, like, if you are a hardcore pool player, then it is a great value because we allow up to 30 entries there, and we also allow multiple pool pick combinations. So you could have a pick five type pool, you know, like what you have with, say, that the super contest or a spread pool, and you could also just have your local picking game straight up pool where you pick every single contest, and you could set up all those contests and get different advice for each one.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, I was in the super contest last year. I'm in the DraftKings championship this year where we're going to be making five picks a week. So yeah, that advice like that is invaluable, and we'll get into that. And I want to get into some stats because I'm hopeful you guys have some of that, but let's get into it on the particular, you know, on the different types that we do. Let's start here with survivor pool picks. And then we'll talk a little picks and strategy. Then we're going to move on to pick and pool picks and strategy. And then we'll finish up with 2020 season projections and team outlooks. Before we get into all that, let me give you guys a heads up that you can get a free trial and discounts all over the place when you go to teamrankings.com/fantasypros. That is Survivor, Pick'em, Betting Picks. Again, teamrankings.com/fantasypros. But again, let's start here with survivor pools. Before we get into general strategy, all that sort of stuff, let me ask you, do you guys have like data on how your subscribers actually did last year in survivor pools?
Yeah. So every year we send a survey to our customers because what we're really interested in is how often they win. But we don't know that unless we ask, because, you know, we know how many games we suggested that we got the correct pick on, and we know how long their survivor entry lasted during the year. But that doesn't really tell you whether someone wins their pool, right? Because it depends on what their opponents do, whether that's a good enough performance, right? So we send a survey out every year to all our customers asking them about every pool that they enter. Did you win? You know, how long did the pool last? Various questions about the performance. And then we compile that and see if we help them beat expectations. And by beat expectations, I mean, you know, we take the pool size and the number of entries that they have and figure out the expected chance to win the pool. So if you have one entry in a 100-person pool, you should expect to win about 1% of the time, right? Mm-hmm. So then we compare how often our customers won versus how often we would have expected them to win based on the number of entries. And that tells us, you know, how good our picks were and how much they helped our customers. So last year, it looks like our expectation for customers last year was to win around 3% of the time. They actually averaged about 10% of the pot share. That's really what we're measuring. Like, they won more often than that, but then they split pots, and so we account for that. They averaged about 10% of the pot share. So overall, our customer base won about three times as much as you would have expected based on the pool size from using our advice.
That's awesome. Survivor pools, we'll get into sort of the different ways that we think about them. They are hard. We were joking sort of before, you know, I don't know, 6 years ago or something like that. I did manage to win one along with a couple of other people. And it was like the hardest experience that I've ever had to do, just trying to navigate the minefield. Let's take more of a macro view of it. And then let's get a little more specific with how pools usually play out and the difference depending on how big the pool is. First, I feel like the average person has this pretty oversimplified view of survivor pool strategy generally, right? I'm going to take the biggest favorite each week, especially at the beginning. I'm going to get through and then I'll figure it out. But without getting into some of the rule variations that come into play with some of these survivor pools, there's a ton of data that people need to consider when they're making a survivor pick, particularly early in the season, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's, you need to have an approach that you look at everything from not just who's going to win in week one, and we'll get to week one this year in a little bit, but just not who's going to win early, but who's going to be valuable later, you know, and how many people are picking them. All these things matter. And so we like to talk in terms of there are three main components to deciding on what is a good or valuable survivor pick. We call it the Holy Trinity, and it involves pick popularity. It involves the win odds, how likely your team is to win, which is, I think, the factor that probably the public puts the most emphasis on. They may look at the spread, see who the biggest favorite is, and tend to take them. It's an important factor, obviously. You want to advance, but you need to balance that with the other two, which is pick popularity, and then the third one is future value, how likely you are to need that team in various other weeks or a specific week in the future. And so all those things play into it. And so, you know, not just focusing on one, that's what a basic player would do. An intermediate player might focus on, say, future value and deciding which weeks and plan out their weeks. And we go a little bit broader than that. You know, we're a little more sophisticated than that. We don't necessarily say you're going to use this team in this week in the future, but we do assign and measure value so that you have options in the future. So if a team has a lot of important weeks or a lot of value in the future, they get a higher score, and then we tend maybe to save them, all other things being equal. Now, if all things aren't equal, we may use them early. And that happened last year, say, with the Patriots, when they were favored by over 20 points, which is a massive line. But that's different than some weeks where say, the heaviest favorite is a 10-point favorite. So you got to take all that into account.
Yeah, right. And we're going to talk later, you know, just generally about this week one, where you've got, you know, the latest thing I saw is no teams favored by double-digit points, actually. So obviously it varies per week. Out of curiosity, how do you guys know the pick popularity? You know, when you're talking about, is it just obviously it's going to be picked a ton because, you know, the Patriots are a 13-point spread this week? Or do you guys have actual data on how many people in survivor pools are making a pick on a particular game?
We have data on that. There are some national websites that host pools like Yahoo, Run Your Pool, Office Pool Picks, and they publish data on what people are picking, and we use that to, you know, we take a weighted average based on how accurate we've seen them in predicting our customers' pool picks in the past, just based on feedback from customers that say generally, like, you know, this one seems to be a little more accurate for my pool. So for current week data, we use that. For future weeks, so Jason talked about future value. Future value is more than just future win odds. Future pick percentage matters too, right? So if two teams both are going to be 10-point favorites in week 10, but we think one of them is going to be super popular and one of them's not, saving the unpopular one is more useful, right? So we have we made a predictive model to predict pick percentage based on the historical data that we have related to that. And so we use that for our future week pick percentages. And then for current wins, like I said, we use the national pick percentage data from other sites.
Awesome. So how do you guys account for, you know, a lot of these survivor pools, they have all these minor rule variations, right? Like there's, the, you know, the win tiebreak rule where, you know, the fewer wins that the teams have, you know, the more quote unquote risky that you went, that's kind of a tiebreaker. Or sometimes late in the season, I know in the pool that I talked about that we won, you had to do multiple picks as tiebreakers. So how, if at all, does that impact the strategy in a survivor pool contest?
Yeah, those sorts of rules are fairly important in a lot of cases. Generally, we take that Holy Trinity that Jason mentioned, win odds, pick percentage, and future value, to get sort of a grade for a team. We rank the teams according to that grade. You can see the grade in your custom pool pick recommendations on the site. But for pools that have different rules, we essentially shift those grades based on the rules. So we'll make the initial grade, and then if you're playing in like a season wins tiebreaker pool, first of all, we try to estimate what the likelihood of that tiebreaker actually mattering is. You know, if you're in a 10-person pool and it's week one, it's probably not going to matter. If you're in a 1,000-person pool and it's week 10, it's definitely going to matter, right? So we take into account, will the rule matter? And then to the extent that we think it'll matter, we use our season projections to figure out, you know, how many wins do we think this team is going to have and compare to other teams that are in similar spots in the rankings. We shift them up and down a little bit based on their win projections. So generally that rule, it's not going to shift a team from being a bad pick to a good pick. It's more of a tiebreaker sort of. If you're considering a couple picks, this rule is probably going to shift one of them up or down relative to the other one. Maybe it'll slide a couple spots in the rankings. Another one, like you said, is multiple picks later in the year. For that one, essentially, we increase the importance of the future value when we're making these grades, because you're going to have to make more future picks. It's more important to save teams for a good spot, because it's going to be a real stretch to survive the whole season if you have to make multiple picks for, you know, 10 weeks later in the year. Again, for that one, you know, we take into account pool size to figure out how likely that's going to actually happen before we make the adjustment to your pool.
Right. Well, that's kind of the next question. How long do these pools usually expect them to last? I mean, when you go into it, are you sort of, you know, when you're giving your advice and you're thinking about future value, are you assuming that every pool, regardless of the size, is going to last the full season?
Well, no, we don't assume that they will last the same. And we've measured that, you know, part of what David just talked about is Team Rankings has done this for a decade. And so some of these strategies and information on pool size and pool types are things that we've, you know, asked for results for, we've measured, and they've made adjustments over time to various strategies to improve performance. So with pool size specifically, obviously the more people in your pool will affect how long it goes, assuming that, you know, people are going to pick at about the same accuracy rate. The more people there are, just some more people are going to last longer. So if you get in a small pool, like David referenced, with 10 people, 20 people in a local pool, the data would suggest that in most years, and obviously it changes from year to year, individual weeks can change, individual years can change if there's a big upset early. But in most years, a pool like that's going to make it into, say, the middle of the season before it's decided. But if you get above 175, even with no special rules, there's a good chance, at least a decent chance, that somebody's making it to week 17. Now, if you add in some rules variations like strikes, where you get basically, you know, mulligans or a chance to come back after missing one, well, then your chances of going longer increase also. So even some smaller pools in that case can go deeper into the season. So definitely, you know, the future value that David and I talked about, it's not treated the same for every single person. That's part of the customization when you put in your pools, is it may treat, let's say the Ravens this year. The Ravens have some really good games. They play the Jaguars late, like in the final 3 weeks. You know, they're going to be a heavy favorite most likely in that game. And it's probably, if you had them, that would be a great pick. But if you're in a small enough pool that's probably not going to last till week 15 or 16, it may not do you much good to save Baltimore versus taking a nearly as good week early. But if you're in one of these massive pools or pools with lots of strikes, you know, their future value is more important. If you're in a multi-pick pool, it's more important. So definitely the pool size affects things, and you need to take it into account when making your picks.
Right. So, I mean, I assume that it kind of comes with, essentially, you're going to need to make riskier picks at some point, right? I mean, there's nobody who goes through a survivor pool from start to finish. And it's like, yeah, man, I felt absolutely confident on all of my picks. So sometimes those have to come early in the season, though, right? I mean, sometimes it makes sense, given probably what the overwhelming number of people are going to be picking and things like that when it comes all in. Sometimes it's not a bad strategy necessarily to go a little riskier early, right? Especially, obviously, if you have a mulligan or a buyback.
For sure, if you have a strike, buyback, or mulligan. But yeah, here's what we know, and we can tie it somewhat to 2020 a little bit here. You never know when the opportunities will come up, and you never know when the values will be there. And sometimes you have to be willing to take those risks early. I'll equate it to a football coach who say doesn't want to go for it on fourth down, trailing early in the fourth quarter, and then they end up being in a bad situation late. Sometimes you need to make the move earlier, and sometimes that opportunity is there. And the other thing that we know for sure in most years, and this year with the Chiefs and Baltimore being, you know, highly thought of and having good schedules, the Chiefs and Baltimore are going to make up a lot of the best picks in weeks, and you can't use them every week. And so from the outset of this year, you should know this. You're going to have to pick somebody besides them. And it's just a matter of which weeks are you going to do it. And of course, that depends on how long your pool is going to go as to how many of those risks you need to take. But yes, almost certainly this year, you will have to take some teams that will be a little riskier. And here's why sometimes it's better to take them early than late. If you take them late, you follow the crowd, and then everybody's picking them because they're the best option out of what's available to most of those people. And so they tend to have a high popularity and be risky, which decreases their value. If you can get a team early that doesn't have any popularity, where the board's completely open and other teams could get eliminated, you know, if you hit the right combination of results, you can have what happened 2 years ago with Minnesota. If you went against Minnesota, I don't know if to refresh your memory, Minnesota was like a 16.5 point favorite.
Right.
I don't know if you remember this game. It was, I think, Josh Allen's first start. The Bills were horrible. Nathan Peterman had thrown like 5 interceptions in the opener, and they got killed by Baltimore. They lost big the next game, and everybody thought the Vikings were going to blow them out, and 60-something percent of the public was on the Vikings because they looked like the clear, safest choice. But because that many people were on them, it presented that opportunity. Sure, it wasn't likely to happen, but all you needed was one game result to go wrong for those people, and you wiped out most of the pool. So that was the opportunity there to take a risk, and it worked out for those that did it, depending on who they picked. Because you still have to get the pick right when you don't pick the popular team. You still got to nail it. And sometimes you can be right in avoiding the popular team and still miss your own pick. And so those are painful. But in that case, if you went away from Minnesota and got your pick right, your chances of winning that pool probably went up tenfold.
Yeah. All right. Well, that kind of is a good lead into week one here. I mean, you have this. I mentioned it earlier. You know, the Chiefs were a 10-point favorite, I believe. I see the line kind of bouncing back and forth between 9 and 10. But there are no crazy favorites this week. Obviously, you know, the Chiefs are heavily favored, you know, for what it is this week. And you've got the Ravens, who are also pretty heavily favored. The Colts maybe over the Jaguars. How do you go about analyzing week one this year?
Well, week one is a very unusual week for this early in the season. Sometimes you'll see weeks like this late in the year where there aren't any super popular teams just because everybody's kind of picked a lot of people and they're spread out. But this is, I think, the first time since 2015 before week 13 that you've had there hasn't been a single team above 20% popularity. Right now, the most popular teams are running at about 16% each. Okay, so what that means is it's way more spread out than normal. You're probably not going to have a week where everybody gets wiped out, but you could have a week where some people lose. And so you got to decide how you're going to play it. Using the Chiefs or Ravens, obviously they have this huge future value, and you got to weigh that. At some point, they become good picks if they're not popular enough, because you know what you want to do with the best teams is pick them when they have good win odds and aren't popular. But you know they're an option. But if you go away from them, and if you Indianapolis is sitting there as a good pick, Buffalo is sitting there as a potential good pick for different reasons, and it depends on where you stand on weighing future value and win odds. And then there's a bunch of other picks that could be good picks that are less popular. So it's very spread out. And so what that means this week is you probably want to focus on survival. And if you're not taking the Chiefs and Ravens, maybe saving up some future value.
Okay. Out of curiosity, because I know we sort of have touched on this, has the general public in survivor pools, so you know people just go in, they you know put down $20, whatever they want to risk, and they don't really do anything except try to navigate the field on their own, has the public gotten any smarter in terms of trying to, you know, game theory it out a little bit and thinking about future value? Or is it, especially early in the season, is it still for the most part teams are going to take people in these pools are going to take overwhelmingly for the most part when there is a heavy favorite, those are the teams that are going to be taken?
Well, I think they've probably gotten a little smarter. I think in general, across the whole sports landscape, fans have gotten a little more into analysis, you know, the past decade. I know in the NCAA tournament, there's all kinds of advice about picking an undervalued champion now that didn't used to be around 10 years ago. So I think probably some of the similar stuff is going on in Survivor, and that's part of why you see these spread out picks in week one here. At the same time, unless all of a sudden everyone's gotten super smart over this one off season, there were plenty of values to be found last year. And so they're getting smarter, but it's not like everyone is doing this. And there's definitely plenty of people that are just trying to survive. And I mean, even our customers, we get questions from people that they definitely have the mindset of, I just need to survive a couple of weeks. Why are you making me pick right. this risky one?
Sure.
I want to pick the Ravens now. So
yeah,
it's definitely, I think it's getting smarter, but it's, there's a long way to go there.
Yeah.
I'll just follow up on David's point real quick. I mean, I looking back through some of the past, there were some truly head-scratching, super popular picks in the past. And maybe we don't see this quite as much, but there's also plenty of areas to exploit. I mean, I remember David can probably back me up on this last year. So the week when week 10 was a decisive week where the Saints and Colts both lost. And we had recommended our subscribers stay away from those teams. And for the most part, I mean, very small percentage in certain types of pools. But, you know, 90% of the public got wiped out. Well, then a couple weeks later, both Oakland was super popular and so were the Browns the next 2 weeks. And I remember one of our subscribers writing in to say, but aren't these the smart people now picking? Or is, you know, does this include the people that would have picked those same teams in the past? And no, anybody that was still picking the Browns in week 12 were people that had avoided the Colts and the Saints right. in week 10. And so it wasn't that they got suddenly smarter. They just happened to have the right pick that week. But they were loading up, and it worked out for them. The Browns didn't lose as a heavy favorite, as a super popular choice, and neither did the Raiders. The Raiders barely held on against the Bengals. And so those 2 weeks, different outcomes, same process, but it wasn't like people got smarter after that big Colts Saints and then started avoiding the popular teams more. It still happened last year.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right, so we've talked a lot about Survivor here. Let's move on to the pick 'em pools. But reminder again, you want a week one free trial and discounted packages, just go to teamrankings.com/fantasypros, and that includes their Survivor Picks content. So go ahead, take advantage of that, truly, because it really is great. I've explored it, and the information is just, if you're serious about trying to win it, you really need to check it out. Let's move on here to pick 'em pools. These are, for the most part, contests where you're picking games either against the spread or just game winners. I asked the same question when we started the Survivor Pool. Do you guys know how your subscribers did last year, generally speaking, in pick 'em pools?
Yep, of course. same concept with Survivor. We send out surveys to ask people how they did, because that's really the only way that we know whether they won or not. And that's the important thing here, not how many points they scored or whatever. And so last year, with season-long prizes, the expected win percentage, in this case, I guess it's a little more complicated than Survivor, because you have to take into account the number of spots that get paid out in a pool. So if you're in a 10-person pool, 3 spots paid, your chance of winning will be 30%. Right. So expected win percentage last year was 10%. Actual win percentage was 30%. So similar to Survivor, about a three times as often as expected, our customers cashed. We also support weekly win pools. For those, it looks like 44% of our customers that were in a pool with a weekly prize won at least 1 week. That one's a little bit more complicated to figure out the expectation, because there's, you know, there's 17 mini contests, basically, and you have a chance to win each one. But sometimes we're not suggesting that you go for the weekly prize, because it's a combo prize, and we say you go for the weekly or the season picks.
Sure.
But based on our estimate, we have the expected win percentage for that one at 39%, actual at 44%. So only about 10% more often than expected, you know, they won a weekly prize. Overall, it looks like 64% of our customers won at least one type of prize in one of their pools.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, I really hope people listening understand how good that is, because that's really crazy. These things are extremely difficult. Out of curiosity, you mentioned weekly. You know, that's obviously a different thing. Do you think weekly is going to be a little more popular this year? Because, you know, the interest in season-long, people are a little, you know, hesitant, especially with, you know, the COVID-19 situation, just generally getting warmed up a little late. Do you think weekly is going to be a little more popular this year than in past years?
I mean, I would not be surprised if it is. Certainly, myself personally, I'm more interested in entering pools that have weekly prizes, because, you know, some of my pool admins, they're saying that if the pool doesn't go at least 11, or if the season doesn't go 11 or 12 weeks, they're just going to refund prizes. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, the pool only has to go 4 weeks, and if it goes 4 weeks, then they'll use the standing. So I'm not really interested in putting all the effort into playing a pool that goes for 10 weeks and then nothing happens. So I think weekly prizes are definitely a lot more attractive this year, to me at least. And I assume that a lot of other people have similar mindsets there. I'm sure there are some people that just play with their friends. They have the same pool every year. It's always a season pool and they're going to do that. But if you're in it just to find some pools for trying to win money, I think weekly prizes more attractive this year.
Well, in season long games, how does the strategy differ early in the season versus sort of at the end game, at the end of the season?
Well, so in season long pools, generally, I guess let's start at the end. So at the end of the season, you know, with a week or two left, you know where you are in the standings. You know, say I'm 5 points ahead of second place. I'm just going to pick favorites. They need to pick some upsets to catch up, right? Or I'm a few points behind. I need to make some riskier picks. I'm going to take four upsets this week, even though I probably wouldn't do that if the standings were different, if it was earlier in the season. So earlier in the season, you're more conservative. You just sort of assume that at the end of the year, you're going to be in the running. You make solid picks. The larger your pool is, the more likely you should be to throw in a couple of small underdog picks occasionally. It's not like you should be picking a 7-point dog to win, but you know, sometimes we'll have a 1-2 point dog that we suggest you pick. But generally over the course of the year, you start out pretty conservative, you get towards the end, and then your strategy diverges to either get extremely conservative if you're ahead, or could get pretty crazy if you're behind and you need to make up points.
And does the strategy change dramatically when you're dealing with the different types of pools, like spread versus game winner or confidence points versus non-confidence? Does the strategy change significantly?
For confidence versus non-confidence, it's a similar concept in terms of starting conservative and getting more or less aggressive based on the standings. Obviously, you have to create the confidence points, so there's an additional aspect there. But in general, conceptually, you're still taking roughly similar amounts of risk at similar points in the season. In confidence pools, sometimes you can load up a little bit more risk on a single pick by making them high confidence. So you may not have to make as many underdog picks as you might in a non-confidence pool. But for the most part, they're fairly similar in the types of underdogs that you pick and when you pick them. Game winner versus spread pools, fairly different. I mean, spreads are completely different beasts than game winners. Game winner pools in the NFL, you know, there's going to be half of the games are pretty much no-brainer picks. You know, early in the year, you're not going to pick a 7-point underdog pretty much no matter what if it's a season-long pool. So half of your picks are already kind of locks. You don't have to think about them. You're just focusing on a few. Sorry, not locks. Nothing's ever a lock, but you know what it
is. Of course.
It's the right
course,
pick to
right.
make.
Sure.
Spread pools, every pick is a potential. You could go on either side of it. And because of that, the pick percentage plays a lot bigger role throughout the season compared to game winner pools. When every pick is close to a coin flip, and if the public is picking a team at 75% or something like that, then probably, even if you think that that team might only have a 45% chance of covering if the public is picking one team at 75%, you probably want to pick their opponent, even if you think the opponent might be a little bit less likely to cover, 45, 46, 47%. Basically, the public pick percentage dictates a lot more of the strategy in spread pools than in game winner pools, because you need to differentiate yourself from the crowd some, and you're taking on almost no risk in situations like that.
Right. All right. So you mentioned that you have data on how, you know, your subscribers have fared both in survivor pools and pick'em pools. Have you guys ever been able to look back at past pools with your subscribers and learn anything about, you know, their, you know, how they deployed their teams, whether it's people who came in first place or how their week to week results look like, and gain any information from that?
Yeah, this offseason we, you know, I have to give a shout out to David here, because David pulls all the data for us, but we're able to look back at everybody who had responded to our surveys that they won the pool, whatever type it was in a pick 'em pool, and match that up with our own internal data, because every week You know, we ask people when you come back in for your picks that week, how you're doing, what place you're in. So we have basically for every entry where you stood in the standings throughout the year, where you reported being, and then we matched up with the survey responses. So we really looked at the ones where the data matched up. They said they were in first, the data showed they were in first in the year, and then we look where they were throughout the year. And there's some interesting stuff in there. Because I think some of this, you know, when you we talked about, you know, gosh, three times as often as someone should expect to win. But what does that mean? Because I think what it doesn't mean is you should expect to come roll people throughout the season. Because when we look back at our winners, what's clear is there are ups and downs in a pick'em season. It's completely different than Survivor, where, you know, you have one pick, you're either in or you're out. In pick'em, it's an ebb and flow. And so it was interesting to see the amount of comebacks. A lot of our entries that won might have been middling of the road through the first quarter to half of the season. And one interesting thing was the median point. I'm going to test you, Dan, here. The point at where half of our eventual winners moved into first place for good. That is, they didn't relinquish first. When do you think that was? What point of the year?
Week 10.
Week 14.
Wow.
Week 14 was the median. 16% of the winners won in week 17. That means they were not in first. They were in second, third, fourth. And they moved in the final week, and about a third overtook first place in the last couple of weeks. They were close, mm-hmm. and a lot of them were in first, but the halfway point where half of the winners, you know, locked it up. Now, there were some that went wire to wire, but it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare to go, you know, right. all year. You got to be in a really small pool. You got to probably be with people that aren't very good. So the lesson there is to stay. You know, don't get caught up in the ups and downs. If you're in a seasonal pool, you want to be within striking distance, and it matters how far back you are, but also how many places. If you're in second place and you're four games back, that's better than being maybe in fifth place and three games back, where you got to overtake, you know, more people. But as long as you're within striking distance in that last month, then you can adjust your strategy. So, like David referenced, being conservative early in season-long pools is the play, because a lot of people employ, you know, poor strategies and fall back. And so basically you're weeding out people throughout the first 11, 12 weeks, and then you can apply the strategy to win the pool. And so that's one thing we saw. We also saw some really big comebacks, so don't give up. You know, there was some interesting ones just last year. Last year was a wild week 17 where the public was just didn't pay attention to motivations. Like, the Titans were a heavy favorite at Houston, and the public was picking Houston. And so a lot of the comebacks were able to come back because the public just didn't maybe trust the numbers on some teams like the Titans being favored, or, you know, the Jets being favored over the Bills when the Bills had nothing to play for. So a lot of those things presented opportunities. But yeah, our winners, you know, they are up and down. I would say they finish above the average of what the public would do about two-thirds of the time in a week. But there are plenty of weeks where they're below average. A lot of the entries we checked in, say, 30 to 50 team pools, they would have a week or two interspersed out of, you know, a game winner pool where they may have gotten five games right. And people will freak out when you get five games right in a week, but you can overcome that. As long as it doesn't happen frequently, and as long as you stick to the same process. So, the lessons we learned there is it was interesting to see how many comebacks and when the point of the season when people really had to make their move. And it was roughly at about, you know, 5 to 6 weeks you needed to be in striking range.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting fact, because I think probably a lot of people who are in these pick 'em pools assume that you need to just be lights out the entire season. Like, you can't afford a 1-in-4 week or anything like that. But in truth, you know, it sounds like it's very common that you bounce back and forth, and that really, you know, things don't separate until the very end when people take control. Let's talk now about this year, though. Let's talk about week one, at least. We talked about survivor pools week one. Let's talk a little bit about the pick 'em pools. What's the general process here when you're looking to try to make the right pick here right out of the gate? You know, you've got a couple of intriguing games here, but, you know, the general process for looking for value picks.
Yeah, so the general process would be, if you're, again, as we talked about with seasonal versus weekly pools, it depends on what kind of pool you're in. If you're in a seasonal pool, you want to be conservative early. You want to identify the favorites. you want to generally go with the favorites, and you may have some close calls in some toss-up type games where you have to make a call as to whether you're going to play for the value or not. You know, there's a couple games like that this week. But for the most part, you're going to stick with the favorites. That means, you know, not taking any super long shots. Like, there are 8 games in week 1 with lines over 5.5 points.
Mm-hmm.
That equates to generally a win odd in, say, the upper 60s to over 70% range or more. And those are the teams that are generally the picks in the survivor pools, by the way. Well, there's 8 games like that this week. And, you know, if you're in a seasonal pool, you don't want to be making those picks. Now, we're seeing 20% of people picking Jacksonville, for example, to beat Indianapolis. That's the highest upset rate of the 8 games in that group. And that's, you know, we would advise not picking any of those upsets in a season-long pool. But that's one you definitely don't want to pick, because not only are you taking an upset with a high risk, you're joining 20% of people in your pool when you could just stay with the Colts and watch 20% probably lose points to you if the outcome goes as the Vegas betting markets expect it to. So that's seasonal pools is stick with it. Now, the more interesting questions come in some weekly pools, which I think can be fun. And like we said, in this year, it might be an interesting to play if you don't want to, you know, tie your money up for all season, not knowing what will happen. You know, NFL week 1's happening. If you can find contests each week, you can also take a more volatile strategy and find those upset picks that have value. Atlanta-Seattle is one in week 1 that maybe you don't take Atlanta in a seasonal pool, but in a weekly pool, 75% of the public's taking Seattle. Roughly. And that game is, that line's been floating at around 1.5 to 2 points, and it's in Atlanta. And as we, and Atlanta finished 6-2 last year.
Right.
So it's not like they were terrible. So, you know, those are the kind of games where, you know, if you see those pick numbers, you may make the upset call, because if it hits, most of the people are going to lose out to you. And to win a weekly contest, you really need to find those key handful of results that will be different from everybody else, and if they happen to hit, because as we know, it's a long shot to win any week, as you talked about. But if they hit, if your results hit, you want to win, and you don't want to just be like needing like 5 other results to also hit because you picked with everybody else. And so that's how you would differentiate it. And then there's games that you should be picking no matter what, which are the slight favorites that are also being undervalued. And so those are games that are good in both types of pools. And that's your games like Detroit, who the public is still liking the Bears, not quite half the time, but close. And Detroit's favored by 3 points. Matthew Stafford's back. Maybe the public's not fully on board Detroit because they looked awful going 0-8 without Stafford. But he's back, and you know, the betting markets believe Detroit will at least be close to Chicago this year. And you have Chicago rolling out with Trubisky and with David Montgomery injured. There's plenty of signs there as to why the number is what it is, but the public is still taking the Bears enough that you can get value by just taking the favorite, and if it hits, watching enough people lose a game that you win.
That's great information. All of that, really, honestly, it's a great way to break it all down. Usual reminder here, because we're going to move on to 2020 NFL projections with projections and win totals. Usual reminder that I said earlier, week 1, free trial, including the pick 'em picks, products and discounts. Go to teamrankings.com/fantasypros, get it all set. All right, let's go here to the final thing, the NFL projections, team predictions and win totals. Let's just discuss a breakdown of the process you guys use. How do you actually do your preseason rankings and projections for teams?
So we use at the core, it's a regression model that we've built. Basically, we took I think it's 13 or 14 years of NFL data. You know, we add new data every year, and we look for traits of teams, be they team stats from the previous season, or stuff like, do they have a new coach, or draft information from the previous few years. We take team stats and team qualities. We make a predictive model to try to predict what their rating will be the next year. And, you know, we throw out the stats that are not useful, keep the stats that are. At the end, we do a review where we
use the market information, see if there are any teams that we're way off on, do a deeper dive on those, try and figure out, is there something we're missing? Why does the market say this when our numbers say that? Try to resolve that either by basically fudging one of our inputs. We say, oh, you know, like, we don't have the Chiefs quarterback rated high enough because we're missing a year of data from Mahomes. Most people have more historical, you know, they have more seasons in their history. We need to bump him up a little bit, that kind of thing. So we look at the market, we see what are we off on, figure out why, and then make a call on whether we think that we should be adjusting or whether we're actually, we think our number is better and we stick with it. Now, I know a lot of people listening might be like, well, why do we think we're better? Because we tracked it. I mean, we've been doing this for a while now. The last, we've been tracking for 7 years. Over that time, our season win total over under picks are profitable, and, you know, they hit it over 50%. So we're pretty comfortable when we take a position that it's at least not crazy. You know, we're not going to be right on all of them, obviously. And if we're way off, we always at least adjust to where we're a reasonable amount off. We're never saying, you know, Jacksonville has a line of 4.5 or 5 or something. We're never going to have Jacksonville with 10 wins. That would just be stupid. Right. But so that's our basic process. A lot of the stats that we use in the model are probably exactly what you would think are in there. You know, previous ratings are really important. Mm-hmm. Teams that are good tend to stay good. Even ratings from 2 and 3 years ago are useful predictors because, you know, Belichick is still the coach of the Patriots, right? He still makes good decisions. So having a history of good teams is a good indicator. You know, having good draft classes is important. Probably, I would think some fantasy players are familiar with turnover luck being a thing.
Sure. Like,
if opponents tended to lose way more fumbles than you would expect based on the number of fumbles they had last year, you know, we adjust for that. I think two of the more interesting ones are, well, probably the most interesting one to me is the coaching adjustment. We found that basically first-year coaches, when a team switches coaches, they tend to regress toward the mean a little bit. Mm-hmm. Good teams get worse, bad teams get better, but it's actually not towards the mean. Historically, what we found is that everyone moves towards a point that's a little bit below average. So if you're an average team and you change your coach, you usually get a little bit worse, actually. And I mean, we're not saying that's the cause necessarily. I think changing a coach can be a symptom of something else that is affecting your team, right?
Right.
And then also there's second year coaching improvements too. Most teams improve the second year that they have a coach, with the exception, we've seen that if they're really terrible the first year with a new coach, they generally don't have that improvement. But if they're not just really bad, then there's usually an improvement the second year with a coach.
And I imagine that we were joking a little bit before we started recording that I'm an unfortunate Jets fan. And I imagine then, as someone who roots for a team that has really not had a quarterback since Joe Namath, I imagine the quarterback probably plays a pretty big role, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Quarterback's pretty important. For a long time, we've had an adjustment in our model for quarterback changes. So, you know, an example this year would be Tampa Bay is getting Tom Brady. He's probably still better than Jameis Winston. He's getting old, but we still have him as a better quarterback. So Tampa Bay would get a boost. This year, we also started adding a factor that's just the quarterback. How good is the quarterback projected to be? And that's beyond anything that's picked up by the quarterback changing. Basically, the idea here is that if two teams have exactly the same profiles, two good teams, great seasons last year, same draft information, everything else, but one team has a great quarterback and the other one succeeded more because they have a good defense that's propping up an average quarterback, the team with a good quarterback tends to stay good more than the team that's propped up by the defense. It's basically it's easier to continue your success if it's quarterback driven than if it's driven by something else, which, you know, makes sense. It's one guy. You pay Patrick Mahomes and you stay good, right? Instead of having to keep together the whole defense.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big impact also. The quarterback is definitely an important part of these.
All right. So you guys do these preseason ratings on teams and stuff like that. Is it, when you think about what your ratings and your preseason rankings are, I mean, I assume that obviously, you know, that the 49ers, the Chiefs, the teams that did really well last year are probably rated pretty well this year, right? I mean, are there any teams that sort of are a little surprising that maybe are coming in higher on your predictive rankings and ratings than you would otherwise maybe the public might have assumed?
So in terms of just value versus the market, it's tough for me to say what the public assumes because I generally just pay attention to what's the market saying, but I know the market is different than the public, right?
Sure.
Against the market, we're highest on Jacksonville, but that tends to happen a lot. The extreme teams, a lot of times the season win totals are a little bit skewed for those, we find. And so Jacksonville being high, we're a little high on Jacksonville. That's one of them. The other one, as far as a good team, because that's probably more interesting, we're a little high on Baltimore compared to the market. Most of the other top teams we're lower on, but we have Baltimore a little bit higher. As for why that is, it's tough to say. If I look at their ratings breakdown, obviously they had a great year last year, have a solid franchise history, a good quarterback. The market knows all that. They had some pretty good turnover luck last year, so we are dinging them a little bit for that. We give them a pretty good boost for their past draft history. We found that drafts 3 and 4 years ago are actually fairly predictive, more than the 1 and 2 years ago drafts. I don't think that's something that is a general consensus or something that I've heard other people say. So I think that's probably maybe why we're a little bit higher on them, that we are giving them some credit for, 2 and 3 year players improving maybe more than the market is. But that would be probably our biggest over on a good team as Baltimore.
All right. Can I ask you, like, your specific sort of the outlook on a team like the Patriots, let's say, who have obviously the incredible coaching consistency for the last 20 plus years, but the new quarterback with Cam Newton, you've got a lot of opt-outs on the defense. So what's sort of the outlook, for the Patriots?
Yeah, I don't think we're that much different than where the market is on the Patriots, but I don't know if the public is expecting even more of a collapse or not. The Patriots, you know, it's a lot of the factors you would expect. They're down in our ratings relative to where they have been, which is they've perennially been a top 1, 2, or 3 team in our ratings for the last decade. But with all the changes, that's dropped them down. The quarterback change, the roster changes, those kind of things are negatively impacting New England, but they still have the history of being good. And, you know, so the Patriots, that's the X factor, right? Bill Belichick. And so our model picks that up in the sense that they've been really good for a long time. And so all the recent years, they're going to have a high rating, pulling their rating up this year. And so if you're evaluating them, the question is, how much do you trust Belichick versus the roster changes? It's an interesting question. I don't know what the right answer is. I tend to personally, this goes beyond our ratings, I tend to personally trust in Belichick a little bit, and I think they still win the East despite all the talk. But we're kind of right there with the market in that we think the Patriots are a slight favorite over the Bills, but they're pretty close.
What about the Seahawks? Seahawks are a weird team where I think I always feel like they're not nearly as good as their end record shows them to be, and then I feel like they're getting lucky. How do you evaluate a team like the Seahawks?
Well, yeah. So when we do our ratings are based on point differential and schedule adjustments, right? Predictive ratings. And so the Seahawks outperformed their predictive rating last year. They barely outscored their opponents for the year. They were in a lot of close games. I think I just saw a stat somebody this week had posted. I think they trailed in more minutes in 2019 than they led. But they also have Russell Wilson, who's really good, and they tend to like turn to him when they need him, but maybe don't use him fully early in the games. So with the Seahawks, you know, they also have good recent ratings. They have not drafted well. Their luck adjustments are pulling them down. And the net effect of all that is they're probably going to be similar to last year in terms of how good they are. And the question is, what is the likelihood they go 10-2 in close games again? And that's where you fall on them. Their win total is under the 11 because it's baking in some of that regression. But if you think they're going to fall back even more on the luck factors, then they might go under that number. And so they are a difficult team. I will say there's one more team, the Bucks. We talked about the Patriots. I do want to quickly talk about the Bucks because when we talk about what you would expect, the Bucks are higher than you might expect in the win total, but for the Brady move. But it's interesting because the Bucks adjustment for us, there are other factors. They've had good drafts, and they have the second-year coach factor pulling them up. So while Brady is getting the public attention, there's lots of other reasons to think the Bucks are at least a team primed to be better than they have been, because they showed improvement in Arians' first year. So when David talked about that second-year coaching factor, they're a team that's getting a positive bump there. And their draft classes, their defense was better than the numbers because Winston put them in so many bad situations with all the interceptions last year. So they're a team that I think it goes beyond Brady as to why they're expected to be a playoff contender this year.
Let's talk very quickly about the impact of the playoff expansion, right? You've got an extra playoff spot here in each conference. How do you see that playing out on, you know, betting on teams that are going to make the playoffs, given that there's one extra spot in each conference?
Yeah, so it definitely has the biggest impact on those teams where they're good but not great, or they're even almost great but they're stuck behind an even better team. You know, the examples here would be Seattle behind San Francisco, Tampa Bay behind New Orleans, Pittsburgh behind Baltimore. Those are the teams that are helped the most by this. We project a specific chance to earn every seed in our season projections, and the biggest benefactor, the team that's most likely to get a 7 seed, we have as the Steelers with a 10% chance of earning the 7 seed. So they definitely have the biggest bump from this rule. It's those teams right on the edge of wildcard contention or stuck behind a great team that are getting a benefit. And then it hurts the 2 seeds, you know, because they no longer have a bye, and they're probably going to make the playoffs anyway because they're good teams.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's finish up on just single game picks, you know, betting on a single game. I don't want to talk about any specifics. Again, everybody, again, I've given you teamrankings.com/fantasypros. You've got the week 1 trial. If anyone wants to see that, go ahead. But what about your how do you go about your game betting picks just in a general sense? What goes into your models?
Yeah, our game betting picks are driven by a few different predictive models that take into account loads and loads of team stats, power ratings that we create, and market data. Also for baseball, they take into account starting pitcher and relief stats. I guess not important for NFL,
right?
But so we have a random forest model. If I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with predictive models, but there's a random forest model which basically takes a whole lot of different stats, takes a subset of them, tries to section off those in order to make smaller and smaller groups that tend to either cover or not cover, or win or not win, or whatever the thing you're trying to predict is. We have a similar games model, which looks at tons of historical games and finds the ones that have the most similar stat profile. So it'll be like, you know, for this Thursday game with Kansas City and Houston, it'll be looking for past games where the line is around 9.5 or whatever it is, and one of the teams is our number one team and the other one is, you know, average or above average or whatever Houston's rated, and they had these passing stats the previous season, and it looks at sees what happened in those games, makes a prediction based on that. And we have a power ratings model, which is purely score based, game location based, and incorporates our preseason ratings that we talked about. So we have those individual models, then we make like what we call a meta model that basically takes the predictions from the individual models along with some contextual info about the betting market information, what day the game is on, because it seems like primetime games and games that are island games sort of have the betting market info contributes differently in those games, it seems like.
So we have, yeah, we have a meta model that combines individual models with some other contextual information and produces a master prediction, which we then, well, it produces a score distribution, which we then use to make picks against the spread and the over-under and predict who will win the game.
Awesome. Well, look, you guys have a bunch of articles on our site, include week one discussion of Survivor and Pick'em pools, explaining value-driven picks, etc. Tons of great information, so everybody can find that on our site. But guys, this is great. Your site's amazing. And if people are serious about, you know, participating in these pools, Survivor or Pick'em or anything, they really should go check it out. Again, I've given the website. But thank you guys for coming on and explaining everything. It's your stuff's fantastic. I'm not just saying that because we just talked for an hour about it. I honestly really mean it. It's great stuff. I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. I mean, I assume if anybody's listening to this here an hour in, they're serious pool players. But, you know, one of the advantages we have is we also, you know, take out some of this work. You know, we've explained our process, but if you don't have 2 hours to think about pick and picks, you know, we can do that for you. And that's part of what some people pay. Maybe they are not in big money pools, but they want to win against friends. They want to, you know what they're talking about. And so, that, you know, we provide that peace of mind. You know, if there's a late line movement that affects a pick, we'll be on top of it and it'll be in your recommendations. And so, you know, if you are out there and you want some help, you know, and you don't have all the time in the world and you like to compete in pools, you know, give us a shot. We do have the free week one trial, and I appreciate you having us on, Dan, to talk about it, and good luck this football season.
Yeah, thanks. You guys too. And again, that's basically it. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to, you know, believe anything. Go check it out yourself. It's a week one free trial with discounts, include Survivor, Pick'em, and betting picks. Again, that's teamrankings.com/fantasypros. Trust me, check it out. You're not going to be disappointed. All right. Thanks everybody for joining us. I'm going to talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, enjoy your last day or two without football.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.